This is All Things ANSYS, a podcast from the technical support staff at PADT. Episode 8, part 1 of our look at explicit dynamics in ANSYS, and a review of CFD tools found in the ANSYS family of products. Welcome to our podcast, All Things ANSYS. It's episode 8, and it's been a really busy month for us here at PADT. So I know that both the simulation services team and the tech support and application engineering and training team has been booked up through the end of the year. So we've been really busy, but I'm glad you guys, we actually got a pretty full house here today. I'm glad you guys could join us today. A little bit of update on the podcast itself. We've had 1,129 downloads as of about an hour ago. So pretty good. It's an average of 171 per episode. So spread the word. We'd love to get to about 250 on average by the time we get to episode 10, when we make a decision on whether we're going to keep doing this or not. So if you like the podcast, let your friends know, let your neighbors know, let your aunt know. We'll take any listener whatsoever. So let's go ahead and do introductions. So the way we do that is we start and go to my left. So Jim, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do here at PADT.
Okay. I'm Jim Peters. I'm a member of the Simulation Services staff, and I do outsource and internal simulation projects using all of the ANSYS-related tools.
My name is Tom Chadwick. I'm one of the CFD support people in the simulation support group, and also support RSM and licensing and other issues.
My name is Ahmed Fayad. I'm part of the IT, engineering IT team here, and basically I support all the engineers with their computing needs, both local workstations or high-performance computing. I also help and support in RSM, high-performance computing, and the ANSYS EKM.
And I'm Joe Woodward, one of the mechanical engineers in the simulation support group. I do structural mostly and workbench customization with ACT.
Very good. And my name is Eric Miller. I'm one of the owners here at PADT, and I don't do anything other with ANSYS that much anymore other than demos, but I'm glad to host this podcast and talk about a lot of great stuff today. And so as usual, we have two topics. Our first topic today is actually going to be on one of my favorite capabilities in simulation, because you get to crash stuff and explode stuff, explicit dynamics. So just as kind of a little bit of a background before we get into the details is, explicit dynamics is a way to model transient structural events in a numerical code. And we'll go ahead and get started by asking Jim, who's kind of our resident expert, what is explicit dynamics?
Okay, yeah, one of my favorite tools to work with. The explicit dynamics is a class of solver, which, as Eric mentioned, is done in the time domain. It's only done in the time domain, so all solutions have to involve time. And this class of code uses, and I'll get into a little bit of theory only to explain the difference between it and other implicit codes like ANSYS in how it does some of the calculations. So the explicit codes use a central difference integration scheme. And that may not mean a lot to a lot of people, but ultimately what that means is that the equations of motions become uncoupled. And when they're uncoupled, they can be solved directly. And by direct integration means there's no requirement for iterations. Like you have to do in an implicit code. There's no convergence checks, as the solution is always conditionally stable. And there's no inversion of the stiffness matrix or any of that that's required. And that's really what distinguishes this class of code from all the implicit solvers. It's designed to handle really complex nonlinear behavior, and it's incredible kind of capability that that you can use to model some very complex physics.
So to kind of summarize, we're not solving an inverted matrix. We're not inverting the matrix and solving every iteration.
Right.
And we don't, when we're dealing with a transient event, we don't have to converge at each time step. We do one solve per time step. So it allows us to solve very quickly mm-hmm. for a transient event. But what's the negative? I mean, why don't we just use explicit for everything?
Yeah, well, you know, all good things come with a caveat, and and then this is one of those. So in order for this particular routine to be unconditionally stable, it has to meet what's referred to as the Courant-Fredericks-Levy condition for time integration. Yeah,
it's simple.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, yeah, refer to it as CFL is really what that is. And so what that is, this class of code is solving wave propagation at the speed of sound in the material. That's the whole reason why you are using this code, is to capture complex physics that normal codes aren't really looking to capture at that scale. So when you do that, that means the time step has to be small enough that it's able to capture this physics effect. And so this criteria, in a nutshell, is dependent on the smallest edge length of an element in your model, and also based on the speed of sound in the material, which is ultimately inversely proportional to density. So this criteria normally means that you're integrating at time steps of on the order of 10 to the minus 6, 10 to the minus 8, 10 to the minus 10. The more dense the mesh, the lower that time step gets. And so the cost of it is that you're having to do a lot of calculations to accumulate any significant time. So in general, this class of code was really designed for highly dynamic short duration events, and short duration events meaning on the order of about 200 milliseconds is kind of where its sweet spot is.
So really short.
Really short. Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't do, and there's classes of quasi-static solutions that can be done where you're doing much larger time scales. But in general, that's kind of where the sweet spot of this particular code is.
Cool. So that brings it to the next really good question, which is what types of problems do we solve with this? And of course, I first used the codes back doing bird strike mm-hmm. back in the day, and automobile crash type stuff. But what else do we generally use these explicit codes for?
Well, the big kind of most popular areas of application, obviously in automotive from car crashing to airbag deployment, you know, anything that's occurring at a really short duration of time is ideal for that. It was really born out of the military environment in simulating weapons and, you know, projectiles and you know, very complex physics related to explosions and so forth. It's been used also kind of related to automotive in metal stamping applications. So those are some of the major ones. But you know, this class of code is really being kind of expanded into doing a lot of different types of applications that are kind of non-traditional. As the technologies develop, there's more and more things that can be done with it.
So one thing I always look at is the stiffness strain rate dependent in the problem, right? So metal forming is a very good example where it's not that short of an event. Like sometimes it can be a very short event, but the big problem is it's fast enough to where the strain rate affects the stiffness. So the material gets stiffer,
yeah,
higher strain rate. So if you don't capture that, you're kind of screwed, and that's hard to do in an implicit code. So
yes, that's right. And yeah, that's a good point to bring up. That's one of the biggest material changes, other than being able to simulate all of the nonlinear behavior of a material. Strain rate effects are most influential in highly dynamic events.
And then before we get into the ANSYS products a little bit, there is the ability to solve for fluids in these codes, right? So it's not a full CFD. Why don't you just very briefly talk about that?
Well, actually, now it is.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, there's...
It's been a while.
Well, especially in, I should say, referring to the Ellis Dyna of the trifecta of explicit codes. The Ellis Dyna it certainly has a lot of capability that kind of mirrors some of the capabilities in ANSYS, but specific for the explicit environment. So, you know, having used this code for over 30 years now, you know, it used to be this code, you know, kind of progressed somewhat slowly, and probably the last 10 years with development kind of being expanded into multiple regions, this code has just been transforming, you know, extremely fast. And even though I've used it for that long, a lot of the things that used to be the same are changing a little bit. So it's definitely a code that you got to keep up on in order to understand what kind of capabilities are there and what it can do.
So I may get my foreign mathematician wrong, but you can model the fluids as a Lagrangian, is that correct?
Yeah, if and again, this is probably more specific to the Ellis Dyna tool. Mm-hmm. There are several solvers under the hood in there. Not all of those are exposed within the ANSYS tool set, but there's the classical Lagrangian is a formulation that's used most often. Okay. That's where the mesh distorts and deforms as a function of loads and so forth. It also has an Euler capability, and the Euler kind of comes in a couple forms in the explicit domain. It can be very similar to the CFD solution, where it's a full Navier-Stokes, and it's more of a it's a fixed cell where material moves from cell to cell. And so, you know, Ellis Dyna has coupled all of these different types of solvers to interact between Lagrangian and Euler's. So you can model fluids, you know, of any viscosity.
So would you do that for a tank slosh?
Yes, yeah.
Take such a bird impact, you model the bird as actually a liquid.
Yeah,
and there's particle methods that are in there too, SPH, mm-hmm. And then there's other newer technology particle methods as well. Those are being used a lot in a lot of forming or molding type of mm-hmm. simulations, and there's some really exciting stuff coming down the pike that is being introduced kind of in demo mode right now. But for any of the old analysts that were familiar with Mechanica and mm-hmm. the P-Element technology, it's kind of a extension of that with a little bit more integration with other types of technologies. Is Ellis Dyna is working on a NURBS-based FEA capability. So this kind of circumvents, you may use some of the same building blocks that you do for standard meshes, but you'll be using a NURBS surface as a definition of the actual geometry. And so that's some really cool stuff. There'll be new elements coming in that will be supporting this capability. And so a lot of cool stuff under the hood.
So I thought, how are we going to fill 10 minutes talking about LSTC? We've gotten through three questions. All right, talking about explicit dynamics. So there's so much to know. But I think a key thing for listeners to know that aren't familiar with it is, within the ANSYS world, so we talked a lot about Ellis Dyna. So Ellis Dyna is not written by ANSYS. It's a third-party company called LSTC. Right. But ANSYS has been a partner with them since forever.
Right.
And it's been integrated in the ANSYS product suite. So it's a solver that's available to you using the standard ANSYS pre- and post-processors. But let's talk about the different explicit dynamic tools that are available to us.
Yeah, within the ANSYS product set, there are two basic explicit codes. Autodyne was an acquisition that ANSYS made some time ago.
It's probably longer than 10 years now.
Yeah, it's probably been about 10 years now. And so Autodyne is in the same class as LS-Dyna, and it kind of had the niche of being a code which includes some of the same kind of Lagrangian and Euler capabilities as LS-Dyna, but it also has gas dynamics built into it as well. So the niche that Autodyne really found itself getting into is related to explosions. Mm-hmm. And explosions can be modeled kind of in two levels of accuracy. One is once something is detonated, there's a sphere of pressure energy, and you can most simply just represent what that accumulated energy is as a sphere and then let it propagate, which is how most codes do it. Autodyne can actually give you the details of how that sphere of energy develops from the instant of detonation to creating that field of pressure propagation. That's where Autodyne really kind of shined in being able to solve those kind of applications. And as this code has been integrated into the ANSYS tool set, you'll notice that there's three explicit tools that are referred to in the ANSYS product set. One's called ANSYS Autodyne, which is the full Autodyne code, which has Lagrangian, Euler, and other capabilities in it. And it's kind of a GUI-based solution. And the other tool, which is kind of a subset of the Autodyne tool, many of you may have heard of the tool called Explicit STR. That's now just referred to as Explicit Dynamics Module. But that is a Autodyne subset. It's just the Lagrangian part of Autodyne. And so you can refer to that as kind of the introduction to dynamic nonlinear materials kind of module. It kind of helps you transition from an implicit time integration scheme to an explicit one, handling applications that are just kind of on the other side of that, like drop tests and things like that. Yeah. And then ANSYS LS-Dyna is the one that we've been talking about the most, and that's the third product, and that comes in the form of a in the Workbench environment. It comes as a module. It used to be an ACT extension in 16 and 17 series. Now in 18.2, it's now kind of embedded into the standard product, and you can activate that without having to load a separate extension. But it's a module which looks very similar to the Explicit Dynamics module. A lot of customers get confused between the difference between those. So the ANSYS LS-Dyna, its Workbench LS-Dyna module, is what the newest integration to the LS-Dyna product is. And that exposes a lot of the capability with the LS-Dyna to merge in with a lot of the capabilities that you need for building models. Anything in the pre-processing side of the Workbench environment is available to you. Any of the CAD formats, any of the meshing routines that you want to use, all of that enhances the use of LS-Dyna.
And then LS-Dyna is the solver as well as the standalone LS-Dyna, so you can actually launch their GUI as well if you wanted to.
Yeah, that's right. LS-Dyna was developed in the early 70s, and similar to Nastran, is a ASCII input deck-based solver. And so in the background, when you create everything, it's creating an ASCII file, and it's submitting that to a solver, and it's producing results as it finishes.
Yeah, so that's, we'll call this part one, because I have I have five more questions, and then I thought of five more while you were talking. So next time you're available, we're gonna come back, we're gonna do part two of Explicit Dynamics and ANSYS. with maybe some words of wisdom on how to get it to work and everything like that. But
right.
But do talk to your support provider if you're interested in it. If you're not using it, the other thing I want to finish up with is sometimes when we're in competitive situations with the competitor that shall remain nameless, there's this belief that Ansys doesn't do explicit dynamics. It does, with three different products. It's quite capable. So don't think that we don't have that capability if somebody says that to you. And then we'll come back and talk about in detail some of these things and get into some lessons learned and things like that in part two when Jim's next available for our podcast. And I'm going to write down, during the commercial break, I'm going to write down these questions so I don't forget. Because there's some really, just got my brain going about other stuff. So let's go ahead and take a little bit of a break for somebody else at PADT or maybe me from PADT trying to sell you something. And we'll be right back.
Dave, you know that sending simulation work outside can be very difficult.
I sure do, Linda. It's so hard to find someone that knows how to conduct simulation that also understands our products and design needs enough to add value. How do you know you have the right partner?
You are so right. That is why so many companies turn to PADT for their engineering simulation needs. They are experts in structural, fluid flow, thermal, and electromagnetic simulation. They know how to drive design with simulation because PADT has been doing it for over 23 years, and some of their staff members have been building and running models for over 30 years.
That's a lot of experience, but let's be honest. Working with a lot of outside providers is like throwing your projects over a wall. You send it, wait, and then get a number and a bill. That isn't what most people need.
You hit on a key difference with PADT's team and why they have been doing this for so long. They have the technology down, but they also know from experience that constant and smart communication with customers is critical. And when they get done, instead of delivering just a number and pretty plots, they provide insight into the physics and behavior of what they are modeling. It really is like having a group of experts right there on your team.
That is comforting. You can get burned without that. So I know I'm being kind of a skeptic, but simulation can be expensive and budgets are tight. So I want to make sure they really are a good solution. My last question is, how on earth do they stay so up to date on so many things?
Yes, their capabilities are kind of overwhelming in breadth and depth, but the answer's pretty simple. Besides doing simulation as a service, they are an Ansys Elite channel partner. They have to sell to and support over 100 customers. This gives them exposure to every Ansys product and almost every industry and application. You really can't find that anywhere else.
Okay, Linda, you convinced me. If someone needs to get some simulation done, how do they get started?
Easy. They can email info@padtinc.com, call 1-800-293-PADT, or visit www.padtinc.com/simulation. Someone from their engineering team will get back to them, usually within a day, to talk about what you need done.
Cool. Thanks, Linda.
Anytime. So what are you working on anyway?
So welcome back to the second half of our podcast here. And some I usually list upcoming events of interest at this point in the podcast. And we crammed everything in October. We have nothing scheduled for November and December. I'm so thankful. In general, our webinars are not that well attended this time of year. Everybody's either on vacation or rapidly trying to finish up their work before their budget runs out. So we tend to get two people on the line for our webinars. So we don't have anything going on through the end of the year. So we'll let you know if we do add something, but everything else is the beginning of the year. So no events that we're aware of that are coming up. Either PADT in general or ANSYS specific. So our next discussion is really on we're gonna totally change gears. So I'm looking at Jim right now, and I'm shifting to the right, and I'm looking at Tom, and we're gonna do a little bit kind of similar, but not quite the same, because we're gonna stay really kind of just an introduction of the fact that ANSYS has several CFD solvers available in it. To users, and I just want to really look at each of them and talk about, well, what's the solver technology under the hood? What kind of solver does it use? And I'm putting Tom on the spot here. I actually told him this 2 hours ago. We'll test his knowledge here. And why would you use that one versus another one? So I'm going to start with the one. I'm not going to start with the one that I was most familiar with, which is Flowtran, which I think has been I think it's been decommissioned. I think you can still run it, but it's not supported and it's not quality checked. So that was the finite element CFD solver that was built into ANSYS, was now ANSYS Mechanical APDL back in the day, before ANSYS started acquiring CFD tools. So the they actually acquired that tool, Flowtran, but they went through this new generation of acquisitions. So CFX. CFX was a Canadian and British company that was actually two solvers at the time of the acquisition. It's just one now. They had just gone through a major rewrite of the software at the time of the acquisition, which was good for us. And it was a really powerful tool. And so, Tom, why don't you tell us about the solver technology under the hood, what's special about it, and then what we use it for.
Well, CFX, the technology behind it, they are all basically sort of a finite volume codes. The advantage of CFX is that the way it solves things is it builds basically virtual cells based upon the mesh that you have. It uses the nodes of your mesh.
The node or the grid point.
The node of
which
site
you're coming from, yeah.
So it uses the nodes of the mesh and builds a virtual cell around it by connecting the edge centers and the cell centers.
So it's actually a polygonal solver.
Right. So it's a polygonal solver, but it's based upon whatever original mesh that you have. It does all of that in the background.
So the polyhedral is
an internal. It's a polyhedral internal mesh.
And that's a volume.
And it's a volume. And the advantage of that is that it's less sensitive to problems in your mesh in terms of skewness than some of the other solvers. Mm-hmm. So it's a more robust solver. Mm-hmm. And CFX, its original claim of strength was solving turbo machinery tools, so that's what its primary purpose is. But it is a general purpose solver as well. So just depending upon the type of mesh that you give it, but it does handle very well the interfaces between rotating and non-rotating domains and deals with all of those types of problems very well,
including multiple blade rows.
Including multiple blade different rows. They've got the capability now that you can do multiple blade rows and handle those kinds of problems extremely fast and extremely well.
And my understanding from talking to the development team is that really all of the new development in CFX is around turbo machinery.
Correct. That's the focus. The focus at ANSYS is that CFX is going to be their tool for turbo machinery applications. It still has the general capability, but their focus in development is to make it a better turbo machinery tool.
So turbo machinery capabilities go into CFX and other stuff.
And the general purpose tool is their aim is to make Fluent the general purpose tool that you use for everything else.
But not AIM. No. We'll get back to AIM.
We'll get to AIM and the other codes as well.
So the other thing about CFX to probably point out is that the post-processor for CFX is the general post-processor for all CFD, correct?
Correct. It uses the CFD post tool, which was developed originally by the CFX developers. And when it was incorporated into ANSYS, they turned it into CFD post. And it's now become this sort of the standard post-processor for all applications.
Once Ensight
acquired Ensight, and once they incorporate that into Workbench, that is going to become the focal point for all of the post-processing.
And before you get scared, if we've learned anything over the 30 years of ANSYS usage is they never get rid of the old codes until no one's using them anymore.
Right. Yeah. They never get rid of them. They just sit there.
Yeah, they just sit there. They just get undocumented. So CFD post will be around for a very long time as we bring this new one on. Yeah. So the next CFD solver I want to talk about is really not a separate CFD solver, but we should talk about it, and that's IcePak.
Right.
So what is IcePak and what solvers does it use?
IcePak is their solver for electronics cooling and compartment cooling. It's designed, it was originally developed as a tool for modeling electronics hardware cooling purposes. The underlying solver is the Fluent solver.
Okay.
It just has its own post-processor that allows you to configure things very easily. It's got a whole set of standard things for fans and grills and heat sinks and all those types of things in there already.
So it's almost a vertical application for electronics cooling that uses kind of a black box version of the Fluent solver.
Correct.
Okay.
Good, it's good. Based on ICMCFD, right?
Well, actually, it's not. It's not ICMCFD. It's AutoHexa, which predates even ICMCFD. It's a preprocessor. Yeah. So and we use ISPAC a lot, and our customers use ISPAC a lot.
Right.
So really powerful.
Basically, any electronics company uses ISPAC to do their cooling.
If you're using a general purpose CFD code for your electronics cooling, or if you're using kind of a dumbed down tool like some of our competitors have out there for electronics cooling, you should be really looking at ISPAC because you have the power of Fluent in a easy to use specialized package.
Correct.
Yeah, we've had a lot of success with it. So the next tool to talk about is the flagship product, the one that's used the most generally, and where general purpose CFD is being developed and improved the most, and that is ANSYS Fluent. So why don't you talk a little bit about its history and what's inside of it.
Again, as with CFX, Fluent was originally developed by a separate company, Fluent, and was acquired by ANSYS, I believe, back in 2005, I think.
Sometime around there. Yeah.
And has been incorporated into Workbench. And Fluent is more general purpose. It has more capability in terms of multi-phase flows, combustion,
chemistry,
combustion, and basically
it used to be, I think it still has more turbulence capability, turbulence models, or is it pretty even now?
It's basically all the same turbulence models. There's been a lot of cross-feed between the two of them in terms of development of the turbulence models, but it does have significantly more capability in terms of combustion and those type of applications.
User-defined physics.
Yeah, it's got a lot of specialty user-defined physics. Fluent was originally, again, as you said with CFX, Fluent was originally two separate codes. It was originally Fluent and another code called Rampant, which was a supersonic capability. It was a coupled pressure and velocity solver, and now it's just a toggle inside of Fluent whether you want to run the uncoupled pressure and velocity or coupled.
Very cool. And so you would use Fluent for pretty much everything that's not turbo machinery or electronics cooling.
That is the goal for that ANSYS has for their tools. They want everybody to be using Fluent to be the standardized tool for general purpose CFD.
And both scale fairly well to many cores, but Fluent even more so.
Fluent is, I forget the number of cores they're up to, but it's up in the thousands.
Hundreds of thousands of cores. Almost linear to...
They've run several hundred thousand cores on a Cray supercluster and shown nearly linear scaling.
For the oil and gas guys. So... the other two tools to talk about are kind of we're talking about these general purpose, well, ISPAC not, but CFX and Fluent are general purpose codes. They're very capable. They do a lot of things. There's a lot of switches and bells and whistles in there.
Right.
In fact,
orchestras.
We've incorporated ice buildup and all sorts of crazy chemistry and all these things.
Yeah.
But so for the average user that's not maybe a CFD guru, we have, you can definitely use those codes, especially with Workbench. They're fairly easy to set up and use, but if you want even simpler, we have, first off, a tool called AIM CFD, or the CFD capability within ANSYS AIM. So what is that?
That is basically it's gone back and forth in what the solver is, the underlying solver. They're
It's a new solver.
It's a new solver.
Called Flux. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a new solver, and they're the idea is basically to simplify the input involved so that the average design engineer who doesn't have 10 years of experience working with CFD can set up a simple problem and run it and get useful information out of it with a fair degree of reliability in the solution without having to have all the bells and whistles that CFX and Fluent have.
So the 70 to 80% of fluid flow problems. And it's right. When I've used it, what I like about it is it's very workflow based. It's kind of steps you through the process
right.
of your problem.
It's designed to walk you through the solution process without having to have a whole lot of knowledge about what type of solver and all of the solver controls that you have in terms of making sure that the solution progresses stably.
But you can then take that into Fluent if you want to.
You can take the mesh and the setup into Fluent, but it's not
like going from Workbench to Mechanical APDL.
It's not in the background writing a Fluent input file.
Okay.
You still have to connect it to a Fluent cell then read that information into Fluent.
So AIM's a great place to start, but a new product that we've talked about before on the podcast that's still in beta that we're really excited about is Discovery Live, and that has a CFD capability.
Right.
And it's a totally different approach, right?
Right. They basically, from the ground up, they wrote an entirely new solver. And it solves not on a standard computer processor, but it solves actually on the graphics card processors. And it's designed to work with the graphics card processors.
And it's using Boltzmann, I forget what the term is. Lattice Boltzmann, or what is it called?
No, it's not. It's not really
Magic.
Using Lattice.
Mesh.
Yeah.
It's not bad. It's using a different type of meshing capability, but it's a similar type of solver. It's just a different type of mesh.
So it's very, very fast.
Yes,
it's you have some accuracy for that. So the way that you're supposed to use it, it's a fully transient right there. You move geometry and the flow changes right in front of your eyes, including turbulence.
Yes.
And it's meant for exploring. It's not meant to say that the pressure is 13.12 psi plus or minus a quarter of a psi.
Right.
It's to say, if I restrict the flow here, I might get a low pressure point there.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's designed primarily for preliminary design purposes to be able to explore your design space and see what happens if I change the geometry in this way. How does that affect my flow solution? If I change the diameter of my pipes or change the radius of the bend in my pipe, how's that going to affect the flow? If I take my heatsink and if I double the number of fins in my heatsink, how's that going to affect the cooling effectiveness?
Doing what ifs and experimenting and playing, and because the response is real time or very close to real time, it helps you kind of get a feel for your design space intuitively.
Correct.
While you do it. I was playing with a motorcycle demo that we'll put on the blog when Ted finishes it. He's working on it right now, and it's really kind of cool. I put a Mohawk on his helmet and saw how that affects the flow and how much pressure pulls back on his head when he puts a Mohawk on
it.
And in real time, and changing the shape of it, how much a little curve on the front changes it. So it's very exciting.
They can also chart like the max and things. You can have it record along with all your changes, so you can go back.
Yeah.
Although they say you can't jump back, but you can undo.
You can undo. I undo until I go back. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we really are. So if you're not a CFD expert and you want to explore the fluid behavior in your products, you know, AIM or Discovery Live are great. If you do need to do rigorous CFD and it's rotating equipment, we say turbo machine. What we really mean is rotating equipment that adds momentum to gases and liquids,
right.
Turbo machinery or rotating machinery. CFX is the way to go, but if otherwise, then Fluent, and if you're doing electronic cooling, IcePak. And we used IcePak for some other stuff that's large boxes, but not electronics cooling. But
kind of, parking garage.
We've done a parking garage with IcePak because it's really good at
doing basically flow.
And then with a fan and an enclosure.
Right. Anything that's got a fan and an enclosure, regardless of the size of the enclosure, you can basically work a lot with IcePak. Yeah.
So that's kind of an overview of them. So kind of some hints on how you pick the right tool. And if you don't know which tool to use, of course, talk to your ANSYS support provider. Hopefully that's us. And we'll come back maybe next time we have Tom or one of the other CFD users here and talk about maybe getting into CFD options for these tools. Post-processing options for CFD on some of these tools, because we've got a couple different options there. Each of them has strengths and weaknesses. So some ANSYS news, finishing up. Thank you, Tom, for all that. Again, we could talk an entire 30 minutes just on that topic, but we stayed. I didn't dive too deep. ANSYS news. The big news is ANSYS released their financials earlier this week, and the stock jumped 10% to up to $150 a share from one when it's hovering around 130 before the announcement, went up to 150, and it's still there today. It's at 149 at the end of today, I think. So that was big, big news. So why did the stock jump so much? In fact, it was the biggest mover, I think, in the S&P 500 for the day. So that's pretty significant. Usually the stock news programs don't pay attention to ANSYS. So one of the reasons why is they had a 10.5% year-over-year gain in earnings per share. So they were making $1.05 per share out there. And that 12% growth in revenue, they made $276.8 million in the third quarter, so that's pretty significant revenue. And the stock price, the yield, so how much money would you have made if you bought on January 1 last year? This year, you would have right now 46.6% stock price growth, and the industry block that it sits within has only been at 35.8, so it's outperforming the industry quite a bit from a stock price standpoint. The reason why they had such a good quarter is they did 25 deals that were over $1 million. And within that 25, there were three that were over 5 million, two that were over 10 million. And one of those two, I don't know if one of them was 45 million or there was also a $45 million deal, but I think one of those over 10 million was a $45 million 3-year deal. We have no idea who that customer is. It wasn't ours. We're still doing this podcast, so that tells you that it was not our customer. But some large industrial corporation made a significant investment with ANSYS, which is not unusual. But as we see with our larger customers, in fact, the ones we deal with, is every year they find more places to use ANSYS and more value in it. And they're investing because it works, as we always like to say. So right now, ANSYS has $926 million in cash sitting there in the bank somewhere.
I'll take one.
Yeah. A little bit of that, which is good. Good. We're actually seeing where we're seeing that is more developers, more new projects. We're seeing them invest that money, which is great. And so with a very strong Q3, there's no reason why they won't have a strong Q4 and a record year. So you know, ANSYS is doing well financially. We always say this, but I'll say it since we're talking about stocks. This is no way ANSYS's opinion, ANSYS Inc.'s opinion. We have no inside information whatsoever. This is just us reading the same press release and Yahoo Financial that you can read. It's really good to see. It's good when a company's healthy, they tend to make smart decisions, and we're really happy about it. Some other news you should be aware of. We just got a press release out a couple days ago that the startup program, if you're familiar with the startup program, it's where you can, as a startup, you can buy ANSYS at a very basically at a price you can't afford, is the way it's priced. One of the problems was some of the customers doing some significantly difficult physics, they get ANSYS cheap, but they needed $500,000 for the hardware to run it. So you now have access through Rescale to the Amazon Web Services. Rescale is running on is a cloud HPC provider, and they're running on Amazon, I believe. And so you can have a very affordable access to their tools. So if you're part of the startup program, or if you're thinking about being part of the startup program, and compute horsepower was a concern, this is now something that you can get access to. So, and the details are negotiable as they are with the price for the startup. So definitely talk to your sales provider for that. And if you are a startup, PADT can be that sales provider. We're not restricted regionally by that. So if you're a startup and this gets your interest, do contact us. We'd love to talk to you about it. Some blog posts of note. The latest issue of ANSYS Advantage is covered in the ANSYS blog, and they talk quite a bit about pervasive engineering for electronic devices. The electronic device industry is kind of going through what we went through in aerospace and medical and electronics over the past 30 years, where they're starting to see the value of simulation across the product line, and not just antenna design or thermals, but everything, system level stuff. So it's a great article about all that. Actually, several articles on that. The other thing that there's a blog article on, and do take a look at this. So in the past, if you want to know how fast a problem ran on a piece of given piece of hardware, they ran a standard benchmark. Now ANSYS can run limited amounts of benchmarks for customers for free with certain hardware providers that are partners. So do contact your sales professional for that and read that blog article for details on that. So it's kind of a nice way if you want to know how your problem runs. If you're running non-standard, in general, the standard benchmarks are pretty damn good. But sometimes you have some weird stuff that you need to see whether it runs fast or not or which hardware is better. There's a really good post of somebody talking about how to do topological optimization in the AIM product, which we've talked about before. And they've launched the new ANSYS student community. So if you're a student, there's now a community for you. There's over 400,000 students that have downloaded the student version of ANSYS, and now you've got your own website to help each other out. So if you've ever posted on where those of us who have been doing this a long time, we can be a little surly sometimes when students ask questions. I think you'll still get in trouble if you say, please do my homework for me, but they might be a little bit more understanding of your situation with your peers. So do check that out. If you're not a part of that, if you're a student, you're not part of the student community, you check it out. So that's the news for the week, or the two-week period. This has been a great discussion. If anything, it's just generated more questions. So do send those in. As always, you can email us at podcast@padtinc.com. We'd love to hear from people, especially if you have questions that you'd like to know more about explicit dynamics or our CFD offerings in the ANSYS world. And we'll just go, as usual, we'll go around the table. So I'll ask you to say goodbye and pass along a word of wisdom, joke, or advice.
All right. Well, I think for me, best advice I would do is related to TELUS Dyna and Fluent. Well, when you've got general purpose codes that are industry leaders, the good thing about that is that they're highly used and there's a lot of examples. So the best thing to do to get started in an application that of using these codes you never used before, you gotta love the search sites because there's a lot of information out there. So don't hesitate to find an application that's close to what you're trying to do. It's a great place to start.
Tom? Okay, well, I heard a joke that I thought was interesting from a CFD standpoint. It's the
CFD humor. Oh,
yes,
yeah.
The standard joke is that the optimist sees the glasses half full and the pessimist sees the glasses half empty, and a CFD engineer sees it as a two-phase problem.
That is good. I like that. I thought the joke was no matter how much compute power you give a CFD guy, it's never enough. But.
Well, that's true, too.
That's a reality.
We just increase the mesh.
Cluster's always full, yeah. Ahmed?
So since we're talking about the cluster always being full, two pieces of advice. If your company or your organization uses a scheduler, take the time to write some scheduling scripts and use it. The peace of mind of tossing a job on the scheduler and walking away from it is excellent for both you and IT. That's one. Two, if you don't have that or you have a limited compute environment, try and play with the RSM. When I first started, I was really scared. And then when I started using it and playing with it, you kind of understand it, and it's really, really useful. It's extremely useful.
That's really good advice and topics for a future podcast.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so I'll give a bad joke for my kids. Two penguins walk into a bar, Mm-hmm. This is weird. You'd think the second one would have ducked.
Very good.
Very good. Boy, I must be tired because it took me a while to actually do that. I was like, what? There was no duck. It was too big. Oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's good. Thanks for everybody for listening. This has been a great podcast. Every time we do these, I'm always surprised at how much I learn, and hopefully you guys are learning as well. My comment is, like I keep saying, month of October was very social for us. We went to a lot of events, did a lot of things. The thing that I'd like to share from it is how wonderful our customers are. It's just so great to see their excitement when they see us. And I'll be talking to some insurance salesperson that's trying to sell me a new healthcare policy, and they come up and start talking to me about they finally got their model to converge and how awesome that was, and we go off on a tangent about some crazy maybe LS Dyna model and how to get the Joe properties for a dynamically sensitive metal, and it's awesome, and our customers are awesome, and it's the best part of kind of this crazy month of October where we get very social. And thank you all for coming up and saying good things, and really appreciate it. And the other thing we'll point out is there's a new Star Wars movie coming. We're very excited about that. We may do a podcast after that to talk about it. So hopefully for customers here in our region in Tempe or in the Phoenix area, we are trying to find a theater to, if you're wondering why you haven't seen The Invitation yet, we're trying to find a theater that'll let us do it. Turns out now that Disney owns Star Wars, I found this out last night, I don't know if you guys know this, they're being very restrictive on who can see it and if you can rent out entire theaters. They are trying to set a new record, it sounds like, on sales. And so our normal theaters that we went to, kind of gave us the runaround as to why we can't rent it, and some inside information looks like maybe that's what's going on, is that Disney wants to have a huge splash, so they're really controlling those kind of events.
Discounts
and things like that. So we're still working on it. We may have to drive a little bit and go to a theater you've not been to before, but I promise that it won't have sticky floors.
Candy.
And it won't be in Globe, but it may be further in the East Valley than we're used to, or in Scottsdale, but we are working on that if you're wondering. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for joining us for episode 8 of the All Things ANSYS podcast. Please join us in future for part 2 of our discussion on explicit dynamics and other fun topics. As a reminder, this podcast is not affiliated in any way with ANSYS Inc., and the opinions expressed are those of the people on the show only. For more information, visit www.padtinc.com/blog, and please share your thoughts and questions through an email to podcast@padtinc.com. See you next time.